97.7 FM, still co-host of American Ground Radio, Louis R. Avalone, in for Aaron. But in studio with us, very excited to have father and son.
Oh, come on. Come on now. I'm not going to ever live that down.
Daddy.
You got to explain that.
You guys are twins.
Yep.
What, minutes apart?
I'm 3 minutes older. That's 3 minutes of my life.
And you didn't have a brother to contend with.
I was the planned kid. Oh, Mike was the unplanned kid.
That's so wrong.
Well, Mike was just telling me y'all were out someplace, and somebody said, are y'all father and son?
Yeah, we were at the ballpark and over Swan Lake, and the guy's walking by, and he says, hey, excuse me, y'all got to be father and son. We're like, no, we're twins. He said, well, y'all walk alike. Y'all look alike. I just figured you were the dad and you were the son. I'm like, I'll never live that down.
That's ridiculous. Oh my God. You guys have a lot of stuff coming up, and this is cool. I love that you're going to be doing walking tours again.
Yes, back by special
downtown.
Demand. Yep.
Tell us about what we've got coming up.
People had asked us, we used to do walking tours up and down Texas a couple years ago. And then we kind of got away from that, and people always ask us, when are you going to start your walking tours up? So we've decided on November the 15th at 10 a.m., we're going to start at Rhino Coffee, and we're going to meet up there. And then
we're going to walk on Texas Street. Okay.
And then we're going to walk up to the head of Texas to the Methodist Church, cross over, and go all the way down to Commerce Street under the bridge, and then come back up. And we have over 90 laminated 8x10 photos that we will show people what used to be in certain places.
Oh.
And a lot of times the building's not there anymore. Some of them are, but they're remodeled. But you'll get to see a look back in time from the early 1900s to the 1950s. Some of these pictures vary, but very interesting. So,
why is it important? Why would you tell someone that it is important to remember or otherwise revisit the past? Because folks are like, you know what? I mean, I got so much on my plate. We need to be thinking about the future. Why are we reminiscing and bringing up all these old memories?
Well, I think we don't need to forget the past. We, like Mark always says, we're standing on the shoulders of our forefathers. And when you forget about your past, your future is not good.
Yeah.
We need to remember where we come from, who got us to where we are, and honor those people and what the buildings that they built that are still here, and still honor the architecture and the beauty of it. You know,
our thing is we honor the people and the places of the past. Because like I say, you know, it's where we come from. We're standing on their shoulders. The people before us, they sacrificed so much to build this city. I mean, you know, they went to work and spent hours away from their family, working hard. They sacrificed, and they built this city up, and we just need to honor that. And so, and our deal is to show the buildings that we've lost so we can try to keep the buildings that we still have that have
yes,
a lot of history.
Thank you.
Yep.
You know, I think back on, I used to love to read Eric Brock's column in the Shreveport Times. And, of course, he's got some books out.
Yeah.
Ernie Robertson.
Yep.
Gary Joyner.
Knows more about Shreveport. Dr. Cheryl White.
Yes.
Gary Joyner.
Yes.
All of these, and you guys are now in, you guys are right in with them.
I wouldn't say we're in there with them.
They're shining the spotlight on them. That's our goal.
They're the experts. Our job is, we feel like, is just to shine the spotlight on them and the people that come before us and all. So, but we're not the experts by any means, but we like
to in that effort. You're putting in that effort to preserve Shreveport history. I'm fascinated. I love Shreveport history. I've got books by Gary Joyner and Ernie Robertson and Dr. Cheryl White and those that have gone before us, Eric Brock. And because when you read about that, like just earlier this morning, we were talking with Russell Adams from the State Fair, and he mentioned there was an actual Mr. Hirsch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure we go, yep. Oh, the Hirsch Coliseum.
Yeah.
And never think twice about that was a Shreveport history.
Yep. Well, that's like there's, you know, you hear about Selbers. There's Selber family. Rubensteins, Hearns, all that you've heard about, there's families out
Uri,
there.
Peter Urie. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Urie Drive or the middle school, J.S. Clark. I mean, there's history that...
Yep.
We're forgetting, and we're that rich. I'm just so grateful to you guys for continuing to do that, and like I'll never forget that I was having lunch in the old KCS Cafe.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I wonder if Mike and Mark have got it. And sure enough, you already had a had posts and pictures on the history of
people that ask us, they say, or they'll tell us, y'all need to do a story on this. And we'll go, well, if you go to Facebook and search Twin Blends and that subject, we've already done it.
We've done it.
For the last 10 years, we've covered a lot of stuff.
So all after all of those years and all of those topics, what would, for each of you, which is your favorite memory or history that you've uncovered?
I like steamboats. I just something about the steamboats. You see pictures parked at the Commerce Street Wharf, and, you know, it's downtown Shreveport on the Red River. To me, that resonates the history because it – Shreveport is a steamboat town. That's why it was founded, because it was on the Red River with steamboats.
Right.
So to me, that's very special.
Yeah, and the steamboat's actually parked like right off of Commerce Street.
Where Cyport is right now.
Yeah, where Clyde Fan is now used to be part of the river. And for me, Mark, I guess the streetcars, I didn't realize we had streetcars till, you know, years ago we were starting to look for these pictures. We had streetcars running up down Texas and all over town, and it's just amazing to see that. We're talking old streetcars.
1890s.
1890s. So.
That had those arms up on top that connected electric. To the...
Yeah. This is long before the buses and the trolleys and stuff. These were actual big streetcars. That's just amazing to see. And we've gotten a lot of pictures on our Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and search Twin Blend Streetcars, you'll see just tons of old pictures of streetcars going down Texas Street and all. It's just amazing.
You guys have you did something on Chelsea's downtown, and there was a big picture, looked like an aerial shot, or maybe it's from a building of Chelsea's, I think in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. And in that picture is my wife's car.
That's amazing.
Parked right in front of the front door. So,
isn't that amazing?
It's a very distinctive car. It was a Ford Escort, and it had this odd, weird diagonal stripe on the side. And I thought, and I looked at that, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in that building.
That's funny.
I'm in that building that moment, because she was there visiting me before we got married. She
that's
was my
amazing.
Girlfriend at the time. No, we had just gotten married.
Wow. What was she thinking?
What was wrong with her? I know. So that's to see things like that and the Shreve Square pictures.
That was fun. That was
and I see people that I was in high school with down at the square, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Yep. This is awesome.
So you talk a lot about Shreveport history. Mm-hmm. How much of it have you found intersects with Bossier City history?
A lot of our stuff, unfortunately, is mostly Shreveport, but we do have outlying areas. We do have Bossier. Matter of fact, we found some pictures of Don Tubbs and the old ice house.
Teakle's store downtown, and Barksdale Boulevard.
So when we run across Bossier, we like to highlight it because we don't find a whole lot of it. You know, for some reason or another, it's mostly Shreveport, but there is Bossier some in there, too.
Ms. It's just amazing to see the boardwalk area back before the casinos and the boardwalk and all that, and you just see buildings and houses and stuff like that. It's just amazing.
Even before the, like, Margaritaville, those houses.
Farms and stuff, farmhouses and stuff. Just amazing.
Yeah, I think I've told the story about a guy that I was talking to that lived down there before all that development in one of those houses. And he said he was mowing the yard, and this old man drove up with an old woman in the car. And he stopped and he says, hey, can I help you? And he goes, I just wanted to see if this house was still here. He says, do you know what this house is? And my friend says, no. He says, this house was where from the Louisiana Hayride would come and stay. He said, I played in the Hayride band, the house band. And he says, we would come after the Hayride and come to this house and jam until early morning hours.
See, houses,
after the show,
houses like that, stuff like that should be preserved.
I agree.
You know,
and it's
moved to LSUS or somewhere. Save these buildings.
Yes.
That's history that you can't replace.
And one thing we like about finding these pictures, and thank God LSUS Archives and Thurman C. Smith capture them, you can see all that in pictures. Wish it was still there, but at least they're in pictures.
Yeah. Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends Northwest Louisiana History Hunters in studio. Aaron is out. Louis Avalone in. We'll be back after a break. 101.7 FM, 710.
Beck, Mike, and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
My Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends Northwest Louisiana History Hunters. Now, how did you guys come up with the name Twin Blends?
Thank you, Ruben. Thank you for laughing.
Well, believe it or not, we're twins. A lot of people, we
and
have to explain
that. And
you
blend photographs. I'm just kidding.
Really, and Mike came up with the name one day, and I hated it. And I said, it sounds like it's a coffee company, you know, flavor of coffee, twin blend coffee. And it kind of stuck. And so now I guess it works. So
now we talked about the Shreve Square and all of the work that you guys have done. Now with AI, I saw this video y'all did.
Yep.
And you kind of brought Shreve Square back to life.
Yep. It was cool.
Now, those people that are walking and laughing, those aren't even real people.
Some of them we might cut out and put in the picture where it's a little closer to the, because if you keep them far back, AI don't really know what to do with them, and it'll generate just something. We put them up a little close, and then it'll generate people that look like that, or sometimes it'll just put just regular
anybody.
You
just type in 19 group of 1980s teenagers or young adults, and they'll put it in there like that. And they hit it spot on sometimes.
It's creepy is what it is. It's crazy.
If you're listening, go to Facebook and type in Twin Blends Shreve Square, and it'll pull up, and it's a video. How long? Six, seven minutes. And we kind of had a little fun with it, with a little Back to the Future theme. And then we have old pictures of Shreve Square, and we make them come to life and talk to the, you know, the camera and stuff. It's really
fascinating. All my Humphreys in the square and stuff
like that. Yes. Oh, I know.
Mississippi River Company, sports page. My favorite is the sports page guy that walks up to the camera and says, welcome to the sports page. You look a little young. I'm going to have to check your ID.
Yeah. Now, is that AI?
That's all AI.
That's totally
the background
AI.
I had him do that.
1980s guy with a handlebar mustache and all, and they put him in there, and it's great.
You tell him what to say, and sometimes it's funky. I mean, okay, we can't use that. That's just weird.
You know? Or it'll have a girl with a man's voice or vice versa, it's just weird. Or they have the same voice, and so you have to play with it a little bit.
Yeah, I told you, I showed you the picture of me as Captain Smith, and I put it in AI, and I'm walking down that grand staircase now, and it's
amazing what you can do with AI. We're not big fans of AI we love it.
A lot of things on Facebook now are, if you see a person on the porch with a bear or
an animal,
it's all fake AI, you know, and people believe it, and, you know, but on our videos, we say right off the bat, this is AI that we're using, so we don't try to fool anybody. We just have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's important to have fun. You know, is there something that you've discovered that's just disturbing, that if someone found out, you know, you've uncovered?
Oh, you're talking about the archives?
Yeah.
Not
if
really.
We did, we'd tell you.
Well, that's the best part.
That's great. Disturbing. I can't say anything disturbing. Everything we find is exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's history and it's stuff that, like, we just found these Film Arbor studio negatives hidden in a studio of Thurman C. Smith, and they're from the 1920s. You got Bird High School, people at Bird, and
It's the back on the football field when they had the concrete stadium in the back, which, you know, a lot of people didn't know they had, and we also found the Broadmoor Golf Club before it was Quirby's.
We're going to be making posts on all these.
And we didn't know what it was until we did research, and we're like, oh, my gosh, that's Broadmoor Golf Club.
Broadmoor Golf Club had a lagoon. Did you know that? They had
a big
lagoon. I mean, we're like, where is this at? And we got to researching it, Broadmoor Golf Club.
Yeah.
But I've seen some of your stories where you're rooting around inside walls and under floors.
Oh, yeah. Under buildings downtown. Yeah. So
you haven't had a Geraldo Rivera moment where you're like, okay, there's a safe here that we've discovered.
Well, we wouldn't tell you if we did. Like I said.
Well, no. We've found bones before under, you know, but it's animal bones.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, my gosh, there's some bones.
We've been looking
here
for, you know, like secret passages, supposedly, in different places. So,
yes. Yeah. Tell us about those. Yeah.
Okay, tell them about that. We went under the Standard Brand Shoes
Standard
building.
Brand. Jason Cram got with us. Anthony Davis. We were down under the Standard Brand Shoes in the basement. It's a dirt basement. We're crawling around there.
Looking for the secret tunnel.
We're digging, looking for the secret tunnel.
And we found it. Tell us about it.
We wouldn't tell you if we did.
You go all the way from downtown.
It supposedly went from there to the Strand, a block away.
Now, we did find something that we thought maybe, but it kind of was a dead end on it.
Yeah,
we were digging. Robertson told us, men would leave the show at the Strand, leave their wives in the seat and go, I'm going to the restroom, go down, there was a doorway.
Yeah.
They could go into the tunnel and over to the inn.
Yeah,
hotel.
Inn hotel. Yeah.
Inn
yeah.
hotel. Go have some drinks and meet maybe somebody else.
Well, you know? We talked to a lady that she knows that her husband used to take the night deposits or something through the tunnel to some bank or something. Yeah. She's seen it. And we need. We should have got with her and found out exactly where
this. But we have, digging down there, we found a gold ring, a couple gold rings, tickets to all the theaters in town.
All the downtown theaters in town. A trolley bus ticket and some old coins and stuff like that.
And a steak.
We were down there, and it's dark, and we got these spotlights. Me and Mike are way back in the corner. Nobody else down there. And all of a sudden, we hear this snake start hissing, and we're like, did you hear that? And we're like, yeah, we're out of here.
We climbed over each other.
I had to go back because there's some coins or stuff that I'd found, old dice and stuff I'd found. I had to crawl back in there like a week later to get it run out. So. Yeah.
But. Mikey Mark Mangum in studio, Louis Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, the State Fair of Louisiana opens this weekend. In fact, Thursday. Russell Adams with the State Fair gives us all the details right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keegan McCarty, Louis R. Avalone in for Aaron. And it's my favorite time of year. Finally, the cool temperatures are here, football season, and the State Fair of Louisiana.
And it's indeed fair time right now.
Russell Adams in studio with Louis and I this morning, and it is fair time. They're getting set up, ready to go. You guys kick off on...
Well, we'll kick off next Thursday. Yeah, on the 30th. And we are as busy as little bees out there. It's amazing to watch that being put together. Back in 2014, when I was first doing fairs out there, I used to get really nervous, you know, a week before the fair. I look around and go, my goodness, you know, this thing opens in a week. Don't we have, I mean, I'm getting,
they know what they're doing, don't they?
But it's just, they do. They've got it down to a science. It all comes together, and inspectors come out, check everything, and fire marshals come out, ride inspectors, the whole nine yards can be done in a very short period of time. Everything is first class, and they open that thing up, and it's a great fair.
I have fond memories of the fair growing up. My grandmother took, we had six grandkids at those time. I was the oldest of six cousins. And she took us all to the fair, you know, every year. It's just, I look back at that and go, she was crazy.
I bet that.
But I have very fond memories. And Russell, let's talk about the big concern, of course, is safety.
Yeah, and we just continue to double down on that every year. Rob Brazell, our general manager, he networks with other fairs, kind of an ongoing thing he does to get new ideas. He's always looking for new ideas and better ways to do things out there at the fair. And some of these policies, 2 years ago, we put in some new safety policies and security policies in place, and they seem to be working. One of the big ones that I'm really proud of is the curfew, the child curfew policy. So if you're underage, you've got to have a chaperone with you after 6 p.m. on every day. You cannot just drop off your kids and pick them up at closing time anymore.
Right.
They have to be chaperoned, and a chaperone has to be at least 21 and cannot have any more than six children that they are chaperoning. So we're pretty structured with that. We are pretty strict with it. I've seen Shreveport police actually grab kids and escort them to the gate or call parents or whatever they got to do, but they can't let them roam anymore just on their own.
And that's had an impact this past several years?
Last 2 years, there's been no problems reported on the Midway. So we've been really happy about that. And then some other things we're doing is a clear bag policy, which a lot of the factory are doing that. I know the Humor and Harmony Festival, they promoted their clear bag policies, and other fairs around the country are doing that. And that makes a big impact too. And then we've added metal detectors, walk-through metal detectors, which we've not had. We started getting those 2 years ago, and now we've got three at the main gate that'll be operational during the week and four on the weekends. So that should help get the crowds in there quicker. You know, mm-hmm. we do have some pretty long lines when people show up all at the same time, you know, but we have to do our safety and security procedures and make sure that, you know, there's nothing getting through there that doesn't need to be there. And our website, statefairoflouisiana.com, has got all of our policies, all our what you can bring, what you don't need to bring, mm-hmm. things that you need to be familiar with before you come out to the state fair.
Absolutely. You know, something that I have been curious about my entire life, so it's pop quiz time. How in the world did Shreveport or North Louisiana become home of the State Fair of Louisiana? Because it is the only state fair in Louisiana, right? I mean, and normally you, for folks in North Louisiana, we would expect something like that to be in New Orleans or in Baton Rouge. How did it come to be in Shreveport?
Well, that fair dates back to 1906, you know, and the first fairs around the country was all about agriculture. You know, kids showing animals and things such as that, and then they started adding the food and the rides and things to get more people to come. They saw an opportunity there. To answer your question, I'll be honest with you, I'm really not sure how we got it in Shreveport, but like I said, 1906 was the first year we did the fair, which goes way back. I mean, that was only 41 years after the Civil War ended, you know, and the Titanic sank in 12,
yeah.
1912. So, you know, the fair, it's a lot of history out there. There are other fairs around the country. Baton Rouge does one. Alexandria does one. Monroe's got one over there. And I think New Orleans got some type of an event down there. But we are the official State Fair of Louisiana. And I'm going to be quite honest with you. I can't answer that question. I don't know if it was politics at the time back in the early 1900s or what it was to be able to get it here in Shreveport. But it's a big, big deal. I mean, and I'm very blessed and honored to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
We've had conversations out there. You know, this is a 119-year-old event, and we're just all kind of passing through. You look back, and back when Mr. Hirsch was the general manager back out there years ago, and, of course, now the Hirsch Coliseum, you know, the Coliseum was named
after. It's funny to think there was a Mr. Hirsch.
Yeah, it is. Several years ago, we did a advertising campaign. It was Memories on the Midfield.
I remember that year. I certainly do.
And I went and pulled an old box of pictures and things, and I got to looking at some of the old pictures that we had, I was producing TV spots, you know, and I was going to start out with some of these old pictures and then transition into today's fair. And I saw a picture of an old Nazi warplane back in the 50s that they had at the fair on display where you could come see the Nazi fighter plane,
which was only about 10 years old at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool to be a part of it, and we have a lot of fun with it. We have a very small staff, but everybody pulls together, and we all wear multiple hats out there, and we get it done, and we always have a great fair. So we're really excited about this one.
Talking about some of my memories when I was in the room right behind where Lewis is, where Fletch is now, the sports station,
right.
It was KWKH. And did mornings there, and we used to go out and broadcast from the fair almost all the time. And Ray Forcier, you remember Ray Forcier was the ag director here, mm-hmm. and he was very active in the fair. And I remember he said one time, he says, "Go get one of those hamburgers right next to the livestock barn." He said, "Not a lot of people know about that booth over there, but it's mostly for the livestock folk." That's the best hamburger I ever had in my life.
Well, you know, we've got well over 100 food vendors now that you mentioned food. We got some really, and they come in from all over the country, but we've got some great fair food. We've got some national recognition on it. The Cooking Channel's been out there twice doing segments. Since I've been there,
I wanted to try the pickle pizza, and I didn't get to it last year.
The pickle, yeah, that's pretty popular.
I know, yeah.
The guy that has that says, man, he does well with that around the country and our fair. And he also has scorpion pizza as well, which...
Oh, now that I don't know about.
Yeah, I don't either. But I, don't, though he, I asked him, I said, do y'all really sell this? He said, yeah, people buy it.
Russell Adams with the State Fair of Louisiana in studio. Lewis in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Scott Hughes in studio. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you for coming in this morning.
Glad to be here. I apologize. You have actually been trying. You've been doing a great job, by the way. If our listeners have been listening, you've been running solo because Aaron's doing a round the world tour in 80 days. Or no, I think she's feeling much better.
And she is. She's doing better. Last report that that we got. I haven't tried to bother her.
Is she back this week, or what's her timeline, or do we know yet?
I think she's scheduled to be back on Thursday.
So back on Thursday, but you've been doing a fantastic job.
Well, thank
You've got guests lined up. I'm so proud of you, Mike. But no, you've actually called me a couple times, and I have been a road warrior. I have been around the world in 80 days, so I've been unable to come in and sit and visit with you and Ruben.
I know. I was like, gosh, whenever I'm out, you're in with Aaron, and I'm like, I want to start taking it personally.
I think you started taking it personal after about the fifth or sixth day. You texted me, and I think I finally sent you my actual schedule. I said, Mike, it's not personal.
So you do travel a lot with your job.
This time of year, we do. We're getting into end of the year, and in the corporate world, a lot of people want to wrap things up before we get to what's really my favorite time of the year. I think the three best holidays of the year go back to back to back. And one didn't used to be a big a deal unless you were 6 years old. But now Halloween is like the big deal. Ruben's probably big on Halloween.
I just wrapped up a huge Halloween party over the weekend, and I'm barely here. I'm barely here.
That's right. You had the big thing at Bears.
It was the 15th Castle Jackson Halloween party. It started at in South Shreveport at a home, the original Castle Jackson, and then the police, it got too big. The police just kept shutting us down, so we moved it downtown. We did it at a few bars until we finally found our home at Bears, and it was...
Are you saying Castle Jackson?
Castle Jackson. My buddy John Jackson, he started the whole thing back.
Okay.
Like Casa Jackson, yeah. I think, is what he's like. Casa de Jackson.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And so it went well.
Went amazing.
Halloween week, Friday is Halloween. The weather looks like it's going to be great. A Friday night for Halloween. And then obviously we roll into what's my favorite holiday at my family's house, Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
I think Thanksgiving has gotten lost in the shuffle. It's the middle child now. And then we get to the big celebration at the end of the year, that doubleheader, you know, Christmas / New Year's, which I think now is officially 67 days in a row of celebration.
Well, I so appreciate you saying that about Thanksgiving, because it does. It gets overlooked. And Halloween has become huge.
And growing up, if you're my age and your age, 40-ish we'll go with today. No, we're a little older than that. But in our age, Halloween used to be some mask you just put on in a plastic draped costume that you got to wear to school and then go out that night. And Thanksgiving was the big holiday in my family growing up. And then you got to Christmas, which always has been out there. But Thanksgiving's kind of gotten short, stiffed a little lately, and we like to celebrate it.
We got a lot to talk about. And coming up after the news, top of the hour, the founder of The Hayride, the political website, not the music, country music show, Scott McKay is going to join us.
Conservative media outlet.
Yes. And we're going to talk about the political climate right now, the No Kings rally and the ICE kickbacks. And just we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on there.
The ICE guys are taking kickbacks?
Yeah.
Or pushback?
Pushback. Okay, thank you. Pushback.
Make sure which way we're going with this conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. Pushbacks against ICE. Scott Hughes is in for Aaron today. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. And be sure to download that free Keel app. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty. Scott Hughes in for Erin. She's doing great, by the way. Scheduled to be back later this week, although she is working at home. We hear from her.
We will.
But on a textual message.
I think she's got to come back and do her day job in order to go to the state fair this weekend. So
she says so. She's doing great. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, our dear friend Scott McKay joining us from the Hayride. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Well, we're doing very well. Thank you very much. I wanted to kind of touch base with you about we've just never seen an era like we're experiencing right now. The political divide has never been greater in this country. And when you look at the news, like the No Kings rally that had 7 million people participate.
Yeah.
Right.
Not quite.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the pushback on the ICE raids. I know the reason for that. But, Scott, is this real dissension or is this actually organized, paid political theater?
And I think the way I would answer that is to bring up something else, which is these people going utterly ballistic over a renovation project at the White House. Right? If you
because no no president's ever renovated the White House before.
No, absolutely not. And if you've ever been, taken the tour and been to that building, like the east wing of the White House is a long corridor and then like a office complex that's barely used. Like that's the east wing. The east room.
They said the first lady's head office is there, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like it's not an important part of the White House. It was kind of a throwaway, thing. The west wing is a big deal. The east wing is not. And every time they would do a big state dinner or something at the White House, they'd put a big tent on the South Lawn,
right,
which is expensive as hell and also not all that safe given, the threats that increasingly you have to the president and to the White House itself.
Well, and then they set up, good grief, Scott, they set up porta potties. You've got these dignitaries coming in from around the world, and they have to go use a porta potty.
You needed an event facility at the White House. What you had currently, you could put maybe 200 people in it. Okay, this thing's going to put 650, 700. It like this has needed to be done for a long time. Okay, like the last five presidents had all kind of complained, like, well, we really need to do, have a ballroom because we can't do this on the White House grounds. And so Trump comes along and says, oh, okay, and he raises $300 million and puts it together. The architecture of the East ballroom that's going to go up is identical to the rest of the White House. Okay, so like he's not putting some steel and glass monstrosity next to it. It's going to look like the rest of the White House. This is an inoffensive project. And yet, everyone on the left has lost their mind over it. Eric Swalwell, who is just about the stupidest member of Congress.
Yes.
I've never seen anybody so obnoxious as this guy. He says, well, when we're running people for president in 2028, they need to all take a pledge that they're going to demolish whatever is built in the East Wing. What? Like, really? Now, how much of this is performative? 99.6%. Okay, like it's very obvious that this is the case. But the fact that they would go to these lengths will tell you just how utterly unhinged these people are and how psychotic the left has become. When you can't do something so I'm not going to call it mundane because hopefully this ballroom is fantastic and everybody can really be proud of it, but like this is nonpartisan. I mean, this is an unalloyed good thing that Trump is doing, and he's doing it without taxpayer dollars. When Obama expanded the White House and I think we like put up a basketball court, he spent something like $360 million of taxpayer money. And nobody complained.
And all we got basically was a basketball court.
I mean, you know, they made some things nicer, and it was more of a renovation than a remodel. And Trump is doing something that, you know, will benefit future presidents of both parties, and they can't hold it together for 2 seconds. So it should tell you, I think that the Trump derangement syndrome is primarily affecting their voters, but their politicians are playing to it rather than trying to reel these people back to the middle. And that's a bad sign, because what it indicates is we're rapidly becoming two different countries under one roof. And, that leads to very bad, very bad places.
Well, Scott, good morning. This is Scott Hughes. Moving back to Louisiana, speaking of things changing, the governor called the legislature into special session. They seem to be, the best I could tell so far, bent on moving the federal election cycle closed for now 1 month. What do you see in that? I keep looking at that going, the Supreme Court may not rule till June. Is all this also political theater, or is this actually going to achieve anything unless the Supreme Court announces that decision in a rare non-final judgment?
Well, I think the way this is set up is to avoid, and I'm not a lawyer, so I want to be very
neither am I, Scott. Neither Scott's a lawyer on this show.
That's Scott's favorite saying.
Yeah, there's a Supreme Court decision called Purcell, the ruling of which is that the courts will not get involved in meddling with elections. So in other words,
inside a certain cycle. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Like, in other words, they don't want to screw up the timeline of an election.
And the filing is set for January right now, and the current bills would move it back to February or March, is my layman's understanding.
Yeah, that's essentially it. And so they're trying to set it up so that the Supreme Court doesn't have a Purcell situation if they give us an early ruling on the Calais case.
In your opinion, let's assume they don't, because I personally don't believe the court's going to put this judgment out until they normally do in June,
right,
like they did this last year. And if the legislature does what they're doing, that's not going to actually change anything unless that judgment comes out prior to January. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, but the thing is that they're going to go in a regular session next spring, so they'll have
be
another
in
bite
session. But at that point, we'd already had the filed candidates. What have you heard, Matt? Because I've heard some behind the scenes, quite frankly, on the Republican side, that there are some. I'm not going to put any names in this conversation that are open to moving back to the jungle open primary for this one cycle in anticipation of a June decision. Thus, they could actually have the election in November, December, as always, and that would let them change the districts in summer. Have you heard that hall talk?
Well, this is what Cameron Henry wants to do, who is the Senate president, because Cameron Henry is a Bill Cassidy ally. And this is all Cassidy's. This is what Cassidy's trying to do, because he knows that if he's in a closed party primary,
a little tougher sledding,
with a runoff, he's going to lose, whether it's to Blake Miguez or, you know, Julie Emerson or John Fleming or whoever makes that runoff with him is going to beat him. He can't get to 50. And so rigging this thing so that he's in a general election, open, you know, jungle primary situation is that's the only calculus by which Cassidy can actually get reelected. And so he has his allies in the legislature. And I don't think there's a majority in the legislature who's willing to be his allies.
Yeah, I don't sense it either, but it's also the only calculus, I think, where they could change those congressional seats for the next cycle. So it's an interesting, you know, standoff.
Yeah, well, I'm not willing to go there because it's...
thinking they can come out before June.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, this was a case that was already litigated from the standpoint of whether the current map violates equal protection. So this, it got punted to this current Supreme Court term so that they could talk about Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. So they have, like, you know, half of the Supreme Court decision that would come down in Calais is, I mean, I don't know if it's already written, but it's already been debated, and they know all the issues, and probably the clerks have already done their briefs on all of that. So, this is not the same thing as a de novo case the Supreme Court, you know, is hearing right now. They can probably turn it over quicker. And the Supreme Court people know, I think Texas is December 8th. Is their qualifying. Mm-hmm. So, like, they know that they're like, okay, we're going to have a Purcell situation in Texas if we don't turn this around fast. They actually could, in the next week or so, pop this decision out. And if they do, then, wow, you know, you can do a map and everything else. Now, that's not to say that they will. You know, we don't know.
Matt's sounding like a lawyer now to me, Mike.
Yeah, right. Well, and what I will say, and I have been screaming this since August, is, and the session's call will allow for this, I really would like it if somebody would go pop a map out there in this session and file the bill and say, this is contingent on the Supreme Court either throwing out Louisiana's current map as a violation of equal protection, or if they get rid of or substantially alter Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, this map is our new map. And it shouldn't be a big deal. They had a map that pretty much everybody was okay with back in 2021, I guess, when they redistricted this thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised as well, Scott. I expected some maps to be dropped too. And I think Mike wants to jump in.
Yeah, Scott, we got to take a real quick break. Can you hang with us? And we'll be back.
Yeah.
We got Scott McKay on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 KU.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KU.
Scott McKay from the Hayride on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in for Aaron. Scott, I want to go back to this. The political theater that's going on, these paid protesters, this No Kings rally, they claim there were 7 million people that participated. Yeah. You don't agree with that figure, though.
I think it was more like 700,000, but, you know, whatever, guys. they didn't have 7 million people, and the biggest problem with, you know, whether it was the numbers or whatever, you know, the biggest problem is those were not mainstream Americans. Like, you know,
I don't see a whole lot of people walking around in a big bozo costume or wearing inflatables down the street.
For the sake of argument, I think they are mainstream Americans. My daughter lives on the Boston Common, and there were 300,000 people across the street from her. And I saw pictures. They seem to be pretty mainstream Americans to me. Why is the answer always to attack the crowd and not worry about what? I mean, we could argue the 7 million, but I don't think all the people that came out there are crazy people in frog costumes.
So in Fairhope, Alabama, there was a woman who showed up with a no dictator sign and an inflatable costume.
Okay, granted, 6,999,000 to go.
I think it's
just bad politics. I think you're playing to Mike's question of calling what clearly is millions. Let's forget if it's seven. To call millions of people crazy wackos when I think most of them were common Americans.
They weren't all crazy wackos, but there were a lot of crazy wackos out there.
And that's the point I'm arguing. Well, I don't think they're all crazy wackos. That's the only point I'm arguing right now.
Let me say it this way. The idea of no kings is a crazy wacko idea.
That's a better argument. I'm making an argument, Scott.
We clearly do not have kings in this country.
That's a better argument than calling people wacko.
Clearly not a king. And it is it's a crazy wacko. The other thing that's crazy and wacko is to go to a rally that is sponsored by Communist Party USA and the Democrat Socialists of America. Those are not mainstream organizations. Those are nut job organizations. Okay. The fact that you had people that are like out in the streets screaming at passing cars which happened more than in just Fairhope, Alabama, a whole bunch of places where you had this happen. Yeah, that's not mainstream. That's nuts.
I appreciate the conversation. From a political standpoint, though, what does it mean for the country? I think that's Mike's question. That's what I want. That's why I wanted to raise
this. Is this real or is this something?
What does it mean when we see this moving forward? Because this is your area. What does it mean for the midterms? Because I think Mike's point is we have a country that seems to be not getting more united. It seems to be getting more divided. And what does this mean for the coming midterms? That's why I wanted to raise the question.
Well, I think the problem that you have, okay, so like, for example, Hakeem Jeffries just endorsed Zohran Mamdani.
He finally did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that. So that, in other words, that tells you that the Democrat Party is not, its leadership is not attempting to move the party back to the center. Instead, right. It is joining the fringe on the left. Does not help the Democrats in the midterms. The shutdown does not help the Democrats in the midterms.
Scott, I've got a heartbreak here. Can you hold with us? Because I want to continue this.
I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Scott McKay with the Hayride on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Going to continue our conversation here. We've got to take a quick break. Scott McKay is on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in studio and kind of really want to continue this conversation on the upcoming midterms. And are the Democrats hurting themselves? I think so. You don't think so, Scott?
Well, I didn't say they were hurting themselves or not. I'm just trying to understand what the issues are they're going to be at the midterms.
We'll find out after the break. 101.7 FM, 710KEEL.com.
Stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Scott McKay on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. You still with us, Scott?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. Thank you for hanging on.
No problem.
I appreciate that very much.
This is fascinating, Scott, and I appreciate it. We were on Mondami, and for the record, I don't like Mondami. What I do as an analyst, think he's going to win. I think you might probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think he's going to win because I think New Yorkers had their fill of Cuomo.
And I agree with that.
So he's the lesser of the evils, ironically, in their eyes.
Well, he's the worst of the three options, but he's going to win. Those two things can be true at the same time.
Right, sure.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Why won't Sliwa pull out?
And that's the Republican candidate for those that don't know him.
Yeah, if I was up there, I would probably be part of the group asking him to pull out. But if I'm Curtis Sliwa, first of all, there's the way they do matching funds for campaigns in New York. He has a financial incentive not to pull out. So there's that.
Yeah.
And Curtis Sliwa is not like some real estate tycoon who decided to get into politics. Okay, like this guy is... lives in a one bedroom apartment with his cats.
Needs the cash. But would it matter, yeah. Scott? Even if he pulls out, I don't think Cuomo beats Mondami.
That's the other piece is that Sliwa can point to polls that show that Cuomo can't beat Mondami. He's already lost in the Democrat primary to Mondami. And he's like, I'm going to represent the Republican Party in this race because, the guy you want me to pull out and endorse can't beat Mamdani anyway. My voters will just stay home. And the thing is, he's not wrong about that. I think the counter that wins the argument, or at least should, is, at least let's have a shot not to elect a communist in New York.
Okay. You bring up that point, Scott McKay. New York is about to elect a communist governor. Mayor.
We all agree on that.
A communist mayor. What does that mean? What does that say on the state of the entire country?
And that's the point I wanted to get to without necessarily calling names. That's a reality in politics that's going to happen. What does that mean, Scott?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw, there was a poll, and I don't remember who did it, but there was a poll that came out last week. And Mamdani is catching 68% of the vote from foreign-born New Yorkers. Cuomo is actually beating him with native-born American New Yorkers. And New York is...
Well, that's a scary statistic in itself.
Yeah,
it's a very international city. That's a huge demographic, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and so like that's where Mamdani is winning this election, is that you've had so much immigration into New York City that it really is not a city reflective of the American public as a whole. You know, and like you shouldn't have a city that is like that in this country. And yet, I don't know how many cities you do have, but New York is one of them.
I think New York is in that case. But so backing up to where we started, Hakeem Jeffries, he endorses the candidate who's going to win. What advice would you have given Hakeem? Would you take the Democratic Party not endorsing the guy that's going to be mayor of the largest city in America?
Yes.
Okay.
If he wins without the endorsement, then fine, work with him, whatever. But like, if I was advising Hakeem Jeffries, and there is no chance of that ever happening. But if I was advising Hakeem Jeffries,
I hear they have matching funds in New York, Scott.
my advice would be just like stay away from it, and you know, let
which
me,
he tried to
beat
do
on you about it, but just. Yeah.
Which, for the record, I agree with you, Scott. I'm not shocked that he endorsed him, but I kind of thought they were all going to stay away from him. They were going to just let him get elected without the official endorsement of the party. So that's kind of why I wanted to get into this question, because what does that mean that they felt that they had to endorse this candidate? I don't think that's necessarily a good look for the Democrats, but they're in a lose-lose situation in the New York mayor's race.
Right. And well, what it tells you is, like, we are very, very far away from, you know, 1992 when Bill Clinton came along and said, I'm a new Democrat and, you know, ran on sort of a centrist platform. Like, you can't get the nomination doing that now. Like, you just can't do it. And so.
Yeah, congratulations, universe. I miss Bill Clinton. Wow.
Right, exactly. And of course, the Clintons are now caterwauling about the sanctity of the White House, and everybody's like, that's not like, you shouldn't be the one saying that. You're in such a situation where, you know, and the guy whose name they threw out was Josh Shapiro. Like, well, okay, this is who they need to nominate in 2028 because he can win. And it's like, Josh Shapiro can't get that nomination now. Like, this is an AOC party.
Right,
now.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, and of course, and it kind of throws in with the Calais case. Did you know that Ilhan Omar's district in Minneapolis is 70% white? Did you know that?
I did not.
It is left wing white people who elected Ilhan Omar.
I actually did. But let's begin with you're in Minnesota. So, you know, there
that explains
right.
a lot.
And of course, Keith Ellison, who actually is from New Orleans and went to St. Aug, is the attorney general in Minnesota. Which is an Antifa guy. I mean, like, Keith Ellison is as far left as you get. Like, that's who the Democrats are electing now in places where Democrats are the majority of the state or the city. I mean, it is a party that is not a particularly mainstream party. And
I would agree it's a party that doesn't have a deep bench, Scott. They don't have a deep bench.
But when you control the cultural institutions that sort of decide what is mainstream and what is not, you can move that needle pretty far to the left. I think, you know, they've done that. The problem is those institutions are collapsing. Mainstream news media, you know, the cable news crew other than Fox News and some of these, like, those things don't hold a lot of sway. Particularly in the 18 to 49 or 18 to 55 demo, like, they don't get a lot of viewership. The newspapers have largely collapsed in circulation and so forth. So, like, and even film and TV has largely collapsed as a cultural institution capable of driving the American people's, you know, worldview. And so when you drag your party far to the left and the public has already sort of abandoned that, like, that's a disconnect that I think they're going to start having a real problem with, whether it's in the midterms next year or you get to 2028 and your party nominates somebody like an AOC or a, I can't see Tim Walz, but you know, somebody of that bent.
Gavin Newsom's the one I think we're going to see. Just I'll go on record
maybe.
And say I think it's Gavin.
It could be Newsom, but you know, but Newsom's got lots of his own problems as well. So
all they have to do is bring up California. Look at California today.
Well, I mean, if I'm running against Gavin Newsom, I'm gonna hammer on the Pacific Palisades fire nonstop, and because the metaphor is he's going to set America on fire. I don't know how they count it's burning.
I appreciate your comments, Scott. You said something I'm going to back up a second ago, which I agree 100% with. One of my friends in the media told me that one of the I'm going to say problem. I think you understand that, but I think one of the problems we have today is we no longer have a town square. We have a bunch of back alleys, and I think that we no longer have this collective media we used to have, whether it's mainstream or not. And now we have new media. And one thing I think the Republicans did very well, Trump did very well in this last cycle, was they reached out to those 18 to 25 year olds. They reached out to that young voter that has been raised without mainstream media, and they found a way to communicate. And I think the Democrats have not found that way to communicate.
Well, I mean, you know, why would they? They controlled the institutions that had held sway over the American people. So obviously you're going to ride that horse until it drops dead.
That horse is dead
and
now.
The horse has dropped dead, and it's ready for the glue factory. So,
Scott, in the last minute that we have, just real quick, when you look at if a million people came out during, say, No Kings, but how do you explain Trump winning on a mandate in October? And how are we where we are today? Is it real?
Well, bear in mind, they spent $300 million turning out that, whether it's 700,000, a million, 7 million people. Like, they spent a whole lot of money promoting those rallies. Mm-hmm. Whether it's paid protesters, like, I'm not even going to weigh in on that. When you spend $300 million marketing something, it should generate some results, even if it's, like, really, you know, really not a good ROI. You're going to get something. Just like if you inject $1 trillion into the U.S. economy with federal spending, you're going to get some economic growth. But, you know, is that long-term effect going to be of any great value? I don't see it with the No Kings thing. I think this was supposed to generate a giant public outcry against the Trump administration and scare the Republicans into caving on the terms of the shutdown, and it didn't. And the American people don't really seem all that moved by the shutdown right now, which is not where the Democrats want to be.
Right.
And whatever they say, notwithstanding.
And I wanted to get to that as well, but unfortunately. Scott, thank you so much. I didn't intend to go on this long, but I appreciate you staying with us and your input.
Scott, I appreciate the conversation. Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys.
We'll talk to you again soon. Scott McKay with the Hayride. Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Tom.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. I heard we've heard from Erin. She's doing great, by the way. Of course, she had a procedure, a little surgical procedure. Week before last now.
Complete plastic body remake. No one will recognize her. I hear people are buying her breakfast this morning.
She posted this morning she's had breakfast at Strawn's. I'm really jealous.
She gets breakfast. We're here.
And a diner paid for her breakfast this morning.
Good for her. She shouted
out thanks to the patron who paid for her breakfast. So she's doing great. In fact, she's working from home. So
she's already giving you orders?
It never stops. That never did.
She's going to roll in like a wrecking ball on Thursday. Our listening audience should just circle Thursday on the calendar. It's going to be must hear radio. That was a good interview with Scott. Scott K did a great job.
Yes. Yeah. Scott McKay. I really enjoy talking with him. If you haven't checked out The Hayride, it's a conservative
Very, very conservative political blog. I mean, and obviously, Scott jokes, as I joke all the time, I'm not an attorney, and Scott's not an attorney.
That's funny. Yes.
But I'd like to think, much like me, he's better than me. He's a very highly educated man. He understands a lot more than people even know. And I just want to go on the record. I chose to make an argument. I appreciate you letting me do that, because I think if we step back from name calling, which is what I'm concerned about right now, and we go to the politics, we go to the policies, I think if we start delving, peel off that top layer, mm-hmm. he's got a lot of great information. He made some excellent points.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out why this is happening.
Well, when he started talking about Cuomo and the base of Cuomo and
Mondale. Starts going to the polling data, starts showing right. you who's supporting each side. Yeah. And I do agree with, I mean, I think we all agree that Mondale's going to win the race, and I don't think it's good for the necessary the Democratic Party, but that's a political reality. What does that mean? Scott, I appreciate that conversation.
Scott Hughes in for Aaron. Coming up after the news, top of the hour, Terry Slack with the FCA going to be joining us. They've got a big banquet tomorrow night. We'll hear about that. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. FM 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in for Aaron on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. I ran into Terry, I don't know, but a week or two ago, downtown having lunch, and we got to talking about you've got a big banquet, Terry, coming up tomorrow night. You're with the FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Tell us about the banquet. This is pretty exciting.
Well, we're excited. Yeah, it's been a lot of work getting together. So we have Luke McCown speaking. Luke played at Louisiana Tech quarterback in the early 2000s and ended up playing 14 years in the NFL with about five different teams. The last team was the Saints. He was a backup to Drew Brees.
That's right.
And Luke's a good friend and just always was involved with FCA and when he was at Louisiana Tech and even after. And we got John David Moore here, who was the number 18 at LSU back in, I don't know what year, probably 17 or 18. And he's from Ruston, and he's going to be our MC for the night. So a little LSU connection. I see where they made the news here last night. So, with our coach being dismissed. But anyway,
good morning.
A little bit of news.
This is Scott Hughes. Where is the banquet? When is the banquet? And are tickets still available? Yeah. Let's get right to that, because you got quite a lineup.
Well, yeah. So the banquet's at Bossier Civic Center. The food line's open at 6. The program starts at 6:30. We finish by 8:00. And it's like going to church. It's free. So anybody can come. They're welcome to come at this time. We've had people sponsor the banquet that allows a lot of student athletes from middle school and high school and colleges come at no charge. So we're really not selling tickets. We're just, the door's open. Anybody's welcome to come. It's not a dress-up thing. That says banquet, but it's, come like you are. We'll have some of the kids probably come in their workout gear. What?
You hit Mike's three favorite things. No casual food and free. Mike's in.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It's no excuses. Come on. It'll be a great night. We're looking forward to the time together. Yeah, it's Bossier Civic Center and Luke's got a great message. He's walked with the Lord. Since he was a young boy and through high school, college, was a great FCA leader in college at Louisiana Tech, also a great quarterback. The other day we were at Tech's game and they honored the top athletes of the first quarter of the century. And did I say that right? Yeah. And Luke was out there. He was named one of those. There was about 30 athletes out there. So he's one of the top guys to play quarterback at Louisiana Tech. And again, we're excited for him to be here. I have my son here, Hayden, who really is the area director for Northwest Louisiana. I've stepped back a little bit to just help him and you know, fading off into the sunset one day. But well,
Terry, let me ask you. I remember when I was an athlete in high school, and I was a member of the FCA, but quite frankly, I wasn't a believer until I got married. I didn't really fully understand the FCA. So for those maybe like me at that time, tell me a little bit about what the FCA is and what y'all do, or if Hayden wants to take that mantle.
I'll let him, I'll say this and then let him say something if he wants to. So the vision of FCA is to see the world transformed by Jesus Christ through the influence of coaches and athletes. You know, if you were in high school anywhere or college, you know, the coaches and athletes have influence on the campus.
Right.
The mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and his church. And, you know, the values that we live by in FCA is integrity, serving, teamwork, and excellence. So, Hayden, you can add something to that if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a great opportunity for coaches, athletes, students in the area to grow in their faith. You know, I go to church on Sunday, but what about Monday through Saturday, you know? And FCA, I think, is just a great opportunity for we see students get to grow in their faith, but also get to share their faith with their peers and just grow in that way. And the key word in FCA is influence. Sports has a great influence on our culture today, and I think it's one of the greatest avenues and vehicles to share the gospel through sports. And that's why we love it so much, just the relationship between sports and faith.
Now, the banquet
I will say this.
Go ahead, Terry.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, our Fellowship of Christian Athletes was begun by a coach back in the early 50s who saw athletes selling cigarettes and alcohol, beer, and he said, why can't athletes and coaches share their faith in Christ? So that's how it started, and it's been a little over 70 years. But what I want to add is that Fellowship of Christian Athletes on all our campuses is for everybody. We've kind of said this about being qualified. All you got to do is take a shower or watch an athletic event on TV, and you're welcome to come to FCA. So it's for everybody. It's not just for the athletes and coaches on the campus. We have some that, you know, of course, there's a lot of different ways you can be an athlete now. I mean, the dance line is an athlete or pep squad.
Sure.
I mean, you know, they're active. So we include everybody. I want you know, we're trying to reach the whole campus and also the whole community with the good news of Jesus Christ.
And Terry, if someone is an athlete, if someone's a high school athlete out there and they can't come to the banquet, how can they get involved with an FCA on a campus? I grew up with the rally at the pole kind of things. If someone wants to find out more about how to get involved with FCA on their campus, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, you know, we had C at the poll in September. We had Fields of Faith in October. But I would say if you want to get involved, you may start with your principal or athletic director. I would say all of our Northwest Louisiana schools have an FCA. You know, they have a club that's Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So they just need to ask and their principal or athletic director, and they'll be able to tell them what they can do to get involved.
Terry Slack, the banquet is tomorrow night. Now, I said it was a fundraiser, but it may not be a fundraiser if you're not selling tickets.
Well, it is a fundraiser, but
okay.
You know, our main purpose is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Secondly, we're like missionaries. We have to raise all our support to be able to go and continue this work. So we've had sponsors that have come forward. This is our 35th year to do the banquet. And so we've definitely got some experience with it. But all of our sponsors, which we have about 65 that have sponsored the banquet, and they've made a donation to FCA to help take care of the food and where the kids, you know, don't have any responsibility for payment. But hey, we want people to come and hear about you know, the good news of Jesus Christ. We want them to come hear that. You know, it's not about us. It's not going to be centered around the money. It's going to be centered around Jesus. So
Terry Slank,
yeah, really. I mean, it's just very casual and just come on and find a seat. And it's, again, it's kind of like going to church. They don't. I hope there's no churches that charge you to come in. But you know, it's open to whoever is searching for something. And you know, I think you'll be challenged in your faith. You'll be introduced to Christ there, and you know, it maybe to deepen your walk with the Lord if you'll be there.
And one thing I'll say is that you'll get to hear about what. How strong and our SCA groups have been in the area. It's been really encouraging and inspiring to see how the students have led FCA, and we've seen big numbers at FCA huddles, 200, 300. 17 of our biggest huddles, we have many more than that. You know, all that together counting is over 3,000 students that are meeting each week.
Has the Charlie and Kirk assassination affected y'all's membership?
I maybe a little bit, honestly, but the numbers were big at the start of the school year before that.
Okay.
I think it's kind of been a spark, sure, and but it's, you know, it's really been amazing how the students have been hungry since the beginning of the school year, really, and even going into last school year, it's just been a different, you know, desire for students to want to be there, and it's usually a sacrifice for them to get there early before school, and they're still coming in big numbers.
At Bossier Civic Center tomorrow night. Guys, thank you so much. Terry, Hayden Slack, we appreciate you coming on and giving us the information.
Thank you, guys. Good luck with your event.
We appreciate y'all.
Yes, sir. Have a good event. Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, wait. What, Ruben? What did I do wrong?
I think we have a longtime listener, first time caller, Mike.
Somebody's on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Good morning.
Hi, what y'all idiots doing?
Oh my God, it's Mayor. It's Aaron from South Shreveport.
Aaron. Oh my gosh. Hey.
Hi there, guys. What's going on?
Well. Missing you. How are you?
Well, I am doing good, and I'm on the mend. I'm having to get up and do my walking and, you know, getting kind of back into swing of things. And I have found out as you get older and you have a procedure done, which is what I'm going to tell you I had done, a procedure.
Right.
You can't do as much as you think you can.
Well, if you've learned that, you've spent your time wisely.
If you go, you try to go again, and then you get home and it starts hurting and you have to take the pain pills. My whole object is to not take the pain pills so that I can drive. And so if I go out and drive and go do this and this and this and this, then I come home and I'm hurting. So I'm just relaxing. Got out today, and I go to Strong's on Uri Drive. And because I really was hungry, I wanted a big breakfast. I'm trying to eat pretty light. And I sit down, and the man at the next table, he goes, "When are you going to be back at work?"
Oh, great. Said, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And he picks up his phone. He's listening to you guys on the Keel app. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that is so cool. I said, I was famished. I wanted a good breakfast. So went to Strong. And he ended up picking up the tab. So that was kind of cool.
Very nice.
Should have ordered a damn pie.
Yeah. Well, I know they're ready to have you back, Aaron, and I'm doing my best to get the audience ready to have you back. So I think Lewis filled in for you last week. But I got news for you, Aaron. When you've been gone so long, we're going to have a new LSU football coach when you get back.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Really? Yeah, that was an awful game Saturday. I was so mad. I still have sausage balls stuck on the wall.
It got so bad. I wasn't even mad anymore. It was so hideous. I was just like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it really was ridiculous. And I'm, you know, $53 million. I hate that we got to spend that, but that's part of what you do in college football. And who's next, though? You know, who takes that job? Think about that.
Well, actually, it's a highly coveted job.
It's considered the number one open job right now. Tops the Penn State job.
Yes.
And the Florida
job. You're putting your head in the guillotine for crying out loud. You don't win. Boom. Bye-bye.
I hear Lane Kiffin is at the top of the list.
Lane Kiffin's the early favorite, I think.
Okay. I would be okay with Lane Kiffin. Yeah. I would be okay with that.
Really?
I'm sad for Kelly. I thought we got a really good coach. It's 3-4 years at LSU, and if you don't bring home an SEC title or a national championship, you're out the door.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I'm sad about Kelly, too. I had high hopes. I was really excited. He came in as a very successful coach coming from Notre Dame. I was really looking forward to it, and it just didn't materialize fast enough.
In theory, he has the most wins of any active college football coach today, more than 300.
Isn't that crazy?
And he will now be the first LSU coach since 2000 to not win a national championship. Our last three all won a championship. So it was set up well. It just never happened.
Right.
And the thing is, when you hear everybody talk, he got everybody he wanted in the portal. So, I mean, he had a stacked squad. So, it's got to rest on his shoulders, you know?
And a top recruit class, so.
Yeah. Do they all stay, though? That's the thing.
Well, that's the danger of this.
Are you out of there?
Right.
Yeah.
Harold Perkins has already indicated he's going to sit out the rest of the season. So we'll see if he stays. Well, but at a certain point, you know, Aaron, you and I have talked about this off air. It becomes financial decisions. He doesn't want to get hurt. What are you playing for now?
I see. Yep. I have a problem
this season.
With
what are you playing for this season? We'll wait and see. But you're back on Thursday, right, Miss McCarty?
I will be back on Thursday with bells on and ready to stir up trouble.
Or as you call it, Thursday.
Y'all should know. Went out for a drive this morning, and I found some street lights out on the Fant Parkway, so I'm fired up.
We're going to hear
the little things that make me happy.
Right. Well, we know all reports have been really good, so we're very excited about that, and it's a lot of answered prayer, I will tell you that. And so Ruben and I are both looking forward to getting you back at the helm.
Absolutely, and thanks to everybody that sent food. And I mean, I get daily calls. I had to literally clean out my fridge. I had too much stuff. So, it was crazy. I got all kind of great stuff.
Well, I had a roast all ready to bring over, but I guess if you don't need it,
you go ahead and keep your roast. That does sound good. Bring that on.
Yeah. Well, we love you,
y'all,
and we miss you, and can't wait to see you.
I will see y'all Thursday.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in studio for Aaron. We were at breakfast on Saturday, and we got into an interesting discussion. One of the local diners that I won't say, Southfield Grill, that we enjoy going to on Saturday mornings. And it's my mom and my sister and family, and we all would try
to
go.
Close to your house.
I know.
That's your neighborhood. Cheers.
Love it. Love it. And so we got to talking about cash, whether or not it's legal for a business to accept or
to not accept.
To not accept cash.
Many businesses are going cashless.
And I thought, it's cash. You got to take it. But actually, after doing some research, private businesses can refuse to take cash.
A business can choose what it wants to get paid in. Now, I don't think it's a wise business move.
No, I...
especially for a place like Southfield Grill, or we do Strawn's. But there are places that don't. Matter of fact, if you go to any major sports game these days, Super Bowl, et cetera, they are all cashless.
And I want to continue this, but we've got Jeff Eno with the Weather Channel going to join us coming up just after the break. Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Jeff Eno from the Weather Channel joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Well, sorry about the confusing emails. I'm an idiot, so I apologize. I said 7:40.
It's so
early. Yeah, thanks for jumping on with us. We've got rain coming in tomorrow that's going to drop temperatures. We're finally going to see some 40s locally.
Yeah, just in time for the kiddos at Halloween. So, it's all going to kind of fall in place. Pretty much a solid day's worth of rain, it looks like, as we are close to a day's worth of rain. This thing's going to come in and kind of blow right out. Got a little low pressure that's going to be centered up a little farther to our north, dragging through a cold front. And with that, yeah, it's just kind of the typical setup. Today, we're looking at temperatures that are going to be pretty close to average. Right around 75 is where we're supposed to be for this time of year. And just for general consensus or the like, last year we hit 90 for the record, so no thank you. We'll go ahead and let that go. Then tomorrow we're going to get up to around 80 ahead of that front, pulling in a lot of that kind of moisture and the more humid air. As southeast winds, of course, we're looking at temperatures again of around 80 degrees. But then as we get into the afternoon, we're going to bring in the showers. Pretty good likelihood for these, about a 70% shot, maybe some rumbles of thunder. But then as we look at the nighttime forecast tomorrow night, we're back down to stray showers. So again, this thing moves in, moves right back out. Kind of keeping an eye on whether or not we're looking. I haven't seen any wording about potential severe weather. So hopefully we stay away from that. We get some nice rain. And then behind that, 62 for the high Wednesday, but also going to be a little windy. The wind. And here's the shift from the southeast, the flow tomorrow to Wednesday, northwesterly wind. Gusts may get up to 30 miles per hour, so that's going to be a nice breeze to go along with those low 60s temperatures. And then, yeah, like you said, upper 40s for the overnight low Wednesday night, dropping down to the mid-40s for Thursday night. And then as we move through Friday, 65 the high, and then upper 40s Friday night.
The Halloween forecast looks good from what I understand.
That's it. Yeah, that's a nice one. During the day, temperatures get up to around 65. We'll see how the winds are. I don't think that's going to be that shouldn't be an issue. I don't think that will be. And then partly cloudy skies Friday night and temperatures dropping throughout the night to the upper 40s, setting up what looks like a good weekend also.
So, Jeff, Scott Hughes, good morning. Thanks for the great Halloween forecast. I know all the kiddos are going to be excited. But I'm looking at the radar, Jeff, and I know you may not be ready for this, but what's going on in the Gulf? What is Melissa going to do to Jamaica? Are you looking at that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's definitely been a big topic of discussion. That storm cranked up to Category 5 status, and right now seeing some of the webcams and stuff that are available in Jamaica, everything is, seeing a lot of rain and obviously that sort of thing right now. But as the storm continues to progress, it's just going to make a mess of things. We're looking at the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, eastern Cuba, southeast Bahamas, most saying the wording from the National Hurricane Center, life-threatening storm surge, of course, waves, and then flash flooding and such. We're looking at rainfall potential possibly as far as Jamaica goes, maybe up to and over 30 inches of rain, and then that will continue to we won't see those higher amounts like that as the storm continues to move north, but we're still looking at 16 to 20 inches of rain as we move towards Cuba with this storm and then up to the Bahamas. So yeah, this wow. This one is a monster.
So that one is going to be life-threatening for Cuba and the Caribbean, but for our listeners, my understanding is it's going to turn to the, you said north, it's going to turn to the east and the north and go up the east coast. That's not going to enter the Gulf. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, that's no, as as of right now, no chance of that. I know Bermuda has seen a few different storms come through, and sure enough, this one is right now progressed to go right over Bermuda once again as we get into the end of the work week Friday. But yeah, this one kind of developed and then kind of churned and then just strengthened all right around into the islands around the Dominican and Cuba and such. And yeah, now this one, there's a lot of stuff going on in the continental U.S. with high pressure, different systems coming through that just steered this one away. Same thing kind of happened with both Humberto and Imelda back a few weeks back, where we saw these storms just kind of come up and then take that hard right turn. It looked like one of my golf shots with a big hook.
So there's no chance.
Hey, that's
Jeff,
not funny.
There's no chance, Jeff, that this storm could cancel the Alabama-LSU game in 2 weeks, right? The remnants won't still be around. It could somehow, we won't have to play that game.
Yeah, there's no chance of that. No, we're the bad news is, yeah, that one's going to have to go ahead and go on through. But we'll have to see if there's any other weather concerns then. But as of right now, the Gulf looks pretty clean as far as any kind of storm.
And Halloween looks great.
Halloween looks really good. Yeah, that's as a matter of fact, once we get past Tuesday with the rain and stuff, we're back to the sunshine Wednesday and then sunshine all the way in and through the weekend.
Jeff Eno with the Weather Channel. Thank you for jumping on with us, Jeff. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. No problem.
Talk to you soon. Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in for Aaron. 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, the good news, according to Jeff Eno with the Weather Channel, no severe weather tomorrow, so...
It's going to be rain. It's going to be one of those storms that pushes through. He said some wind on Tuesday and Wednesday. But then there's a reward, right?
Oh, my gosh. Finally, some fall weather. Have you had your AC on? Scott Hughes in for Aaron, by the way.
I think we've had ours on a little bit. It kicks on, you know, in that height of the day. But I'm more worried about I hadn't turned the heat on. I heard 40s.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I've got a gas, not a stove, but a gas heater that I bought years ago. And of course, my wife's first response was, why'd you spend that much money? And now it's like,
Pawpaw.
That's the best. Yeah. That's the best money you've ever spent. Cause it's
little,
just
a little space heater kind of deal. Yeah. You just turn on where you need to be warm,
but it has the ceramic logs in it. We put it in the fireplace insert there in the living room. That thing will heat up half the house. It's awesome.
Fireplaces were designed for a reason.
Yeah, we'll have to be kicking that on, I think, later this week.
Yeah, because he was saying by Wednesday night into Thursday, the lows are going to be in the 40s. So that means when we wake up in the morning, it's going to be 40 or 50. The highs are only in the 70s.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
And according to our weather guy, Jeff, go ahead and plan Friday Halloween. It looks like it's going to be a nice day.
Beautiful. Yeah, the rest of the week's going to be gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And with the rain, it drops the humidity after.
It does.
So this weekend was beautiful. Did you get outside? I actually got outside and got a little bit of yard work done and...
We, to be honest, we watched a lot of football. My daughter is she's at University of Virginia. So
right, we're UVA. That's right.
They're having a great season. They're now in the top 15, and they had an exciting win in overtime. And we watched a couple other games, and then we built up for that LSU game. And then the first half was okay. Hope sprung eternal, and then it went bad.
It was like a different team that came out at halftime because – A&M, look, and all credit to A&M. They're a fantastic team.
They kicked our butts.
They're a great team, and it wasn't officiating, although officiating
they're undefeated,
was,
for the record. I mean, lost in the shuffle, A&M's undefeated.
And so not taking anything away from A&M, but in the first half, I did see some a spark with LSU. I did see some fight and a little bit of extra oomph in their play.
Harlan Berry, the running back that got the start, he's got some skills.
But that fight was gone halftime.
It's funny, Mike, because I was looking at it post when it all went bad. And I went back and realized, yes, there was some fight. But then I also remembered we really didn't stop A&M in the first half.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We had a couple of interceptions, one of them like at the end zone. Two of our points was a safety. And so, you know, we kind of really struggled in the first half, but we masked it because we were still in the game. And then it all went bad with that punt return.
Well, and then, of course, Sunday morning, Brian Kelly lost his job. So
I'm sad about it. I am too.
Actually,
I think it marks a complete disappointing end to what could have been a good setup. Again, he's one of the winningest active football
coach.
LSU resources, and now it probably means another year or two that we're going to wallow around and get things right. We can get things right. A lot of money was spent that's now going to be wasted. Lives changed, but I think it's the right decision. He can't serve. Mm-hmm. LSU is off the next week. If you're not an LSU fan or know the schedule, they're taking their traditional week off
before
ahead
Bama.
Of the Alabama beatdown, which is coming in 2 weeks. And so there's no way Kelly could have survived these 2 weeks, much less probably the Alabama game.
Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here. You got someone filling in tomorrow. I'm not back.
No, I had already talked to Jeff Luce.
Jeff Luce is coming
in. Yeah, he's been out of town, so he'll be back. He gets back today, so he'll be in tomorrow.
And then the glorious return of the Queen on Thursday, Aaron.
Looking forward to it. Y'all have a great morning. Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.